Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ. And we encourage you to listen in and listen carefully, listen critically. And I know a lot of people don't admonish their listeners to listen critically because they speak or they write as though they are always right. We can be wrong. Preachers can be wrong. Bible teachers can be wrong. Anytime and every time we fail or refuse to speak as the oracles of God, we're wrong. So we want you to do your part. We want you to exercise the nobility of the Bereans. They were more noble-minded than those Jews in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so. Acts chapter 17, verse 11. We want you to do that very thing. So if you do discover that we've taught something in error, be sure and let us know. We'll be happy to consider everything that you have to say. And you can, we welcome you to our services, of course, as we do about every week. We announce that our service times at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, or also worship together. That's Bible study. Worship at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings and 6 o'clock on Sunday evenings. Then Bible study at 7 o'clock. So you could bring something to our attention by meeting with us, or if you can't meet with us but want to contact us, you can write us regular postal mail, 125 Hilltopper Avenue, Bowling Green, Kentucky, and that's 42101. Or go to our website, parkwaychurchofchrist.com. Find the email form there, and you can email us. Call us if you want to, area code 270-842-2049. But be sure and let us know if there's something that you want to discuss, or if you want to study the Bible together with us. Last week, we were going through Matthew chapter 7, and is often the situation when you're dealing with topics like that, where you have several points in a chapter. I ran out of time. I ran out of time right in the middle of a point in Matthew chapter 7 in verse 21. Matthew 7 and verse 21. Now remember that in our study we started out in the first verses talking about the type of judging that Jesus condemns. It's not just all criticism of things that are sinful and wrong. Why on earth would God be condemning of that when His own Son, when God in the flesh, came and was critical of sin and error? No, it can't be that. And so we need to be careful about condemning those who are critical of sin and error. In fact, that's hypocrisy in and of itself, and it's judging those who are judging. I don't understand how people think they can just do that and be guilt-free. They're violating their own rule in Matthew that they fabricate based upon a misconception of Matthew 7 and verse 1. What we concluded was, you read the passage, verses 1 through 5, and you will easily conclude this, that Jesus was condemning hypocritical judging. John 7 and verse 24 says, "Judge not according to outward appearance, but judge righteous judgment." That verse in John 7, verse 24, actually commands judging. So we have to define our terms, and that's what we did in Matthew 7, 1 through 5 last week. And then we went on and we talked about the passage that talks about the gate that is wide and the road spacious that leads to death, and many that go that way, but the gate is narrow and the road restricted that leads to life, verses 13 and 14. We talked about false prophets, and then that got us down to where we ran out of time. False prophets, verses 15 through 20. In verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter into heaven's kingdom, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." So we emphasize the importance of obedience, the importance of obedient faith. And I don't know why we have to say that. I really don't know why that, I have to preach lessons on this, because there are so many people who have misconceptions about it, who hold to the idea of faith only salvation. There's so many people out there, such a large percentage of religious people, who take that position, that I always feel compelled to deal with this a few times every year on the radio. I'll preach on it occasionally. The Bible talks about obedient faith. Faith that works by love. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 6. That is really just the whole thought in quite a nutshell there. Faith that works by love is what Paul commended to the Galatians. So I was making this point that the faith here must be obedient faith. In order for a person to please God, in order for him to go to heaven, he must do the will of Jesus said, my Father who is in heaven. Now, and as I said, I ran out of time on this point. Verse 22 says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name? And in your name have we not cast out demons? And in your name we've done many miracles or wonderful works. I was about to say, because I was thinking in my mind, King James wording. And verse 23, Jesus said, then I will say to them, I never have known you. I've never known you. Go away, workers of iniquity. Now, what was wrong? You'd say, well, weren't they? They were doing things. They were doing things, but notice that Jesus said you actually were working iniquity. Whether or not they were claiming the power to do these things or thinking that they were doing these things, the point is Jesus said you're working without divine authority. And that's a lesson here in this. When we think about doing God's will, we need to think in terms of pleasing God, following God's instructions. We don't get to make up something, a practice, and say, we are doing something, and then attribute that to God. And that's what Jesus was addressing here. And I see this too much in religion today. People make the argument for faith-only salvation and turn right around and go to churches that basically fabricate works and functions and activities that you cannot read about in the New Testament. So they end up doing what they decry, what they speak out against, and they criticize. They criticize the idea of doing anything, then they make up a bunch of stuff to do, and they're not doing what the Bible teaches. So this is the lesson here. In order for it to be doing that saves, in order for the doing to save, it must be doing the will of our Father in heaven. It cannot just be doing something. All kinds of people do all kinds of things, and then they attribute those things to God. But really, they're just doing what they want to do. They do what they want to do. They do what makes them feel good, and they say, hey, this seems like a good work. This must be God's work. We're doing God's work. Oh, friends, we'll know if it's God's work. We'll know if it's God's work according to Ephesians 2 and verse 10, because God has prescribed what is good work. All you have to do is read the New Testament. If you're interested in good work from a personal perspective, that is, what can I personally do that will be a good work, read your Bible. Read the epistles and study examples of doing good. If you're interested in the church where you're a member doing good, then look at passages that address the work or works of the church, and then you'll know. Is it a good work for the church to provide food and fun and festivities for people? Is that the work of the church? Well, where is the passage for that? Where is the passage for that? The only time I read about churches providing food for people is examples, extreme cases, where you had needy saints. Needy saints. And there are no other examples of it. So people just fabricate where they can't find Scripture. They just make things up. They're not limited by the Scriptures. They're just doing what they want to do. And then in that class of people, sadly, too many are very hypocritical because they condemn doing, even though Jesus said you must do the will of your Father who is in heaven, but then they proceed to do things. But they're things that they've made up. So Matthew 7, 22 and 23. Jesus explains how this whole thing works. So you have verses 21 through 23 that are connected in this matter of our activities, the things that we feel good about doing. We must make sure first that they are divinely prescribed. They're divinely authorized. That's the moral of, that's the lesson from verses 21 through 23. Well, how does this work? Jesus said in verse 24, "Everyone who listens to my words and does them is like a wise man who built his house upon a rock. The rains came, the waters rose, the winds beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had been founded upon the rock." Okay, so we think in terms of a good and solid foundation. "However, everyone who listens to my words but does not do them is like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. The rains came." I think most of us understand what's going to happen here. We've seen so much flooding, you know, back earlier this year. Most people have seen the pictures, seen the videos, and maybe even seen it in person. The effects of hard rain, what it does. And so we're reading here something we can immediately relate to. "He built his house upon the sand. The rains came, the waters rose, the winds beat." And that's how it works, isn't it? It's what it sounds like, what it feels like. "Beat against the house, and it collapsed. And its fall was great." I'm thinking of those videos back earlier in the spring this year, of this year, 2025. And all of those in Texas and various places, Tennessee, some in Kentucky, where houses, whole houses, are floating down rivers. It's just incredible. That's what we're reading about right here. The houses collapse. The foundation is gone out from under them, and so they collapse. So this is an illustration by Jesus for what? Did you notice the words that we should emphasize? "Everyone who listens to my words and does them is like a wise man." All right? What is the other side of it? Well, however, everyone who listens to my words but does not do them. Does not do them. I want to take just a little bit of an aside to develop this category of people right here. Because it's interesting how this worked. The story of Jesus here is about listening, and one does and the other does not. That's what we read. It's very simple. Sadly, this class of people here who listens but does not do what they're told to do, it seems like the conscience is working, and sometimes all of a sudden it stops working with these people. And you kind of read about an extension of this mentality. In other words, where it goes and it all of a sudden stops listening. And Jesus talks about this group of people in John chapter 3 in verses 19 through 21. We read about them in Acts chapter 7. You remember in Acts chapter 7 what happened? You read that Stephen is preaching and he's explaining history, Jewish history, and he's explaining what the rebels had done to the prophets of the past and how they had abused them and mistreated them. And he's making these points, and Stephen says, "You've been the murderers and betrayers of Jesus Christ, the righteous one." And it says after they heard these things, they became infuriated. What did they do? Verse 57, that's verse 54 of Acts 7. Verse 57 says, and think about this carefully, friends, because this is where we are today in our culture. This is where we are. If you ever wondered where these people will eventually go who maybe initially were willing to listen a little, but they just didn't want to do anything, sadly, a certain percentage of them, it all goes back to their conscience and what they're prepared to do to other people. Certain percentage of them are going to have a problem. They're going to develop some kind of psychological conscience problem. And they go from verse 54 of Acts chapter 7 of just becoming infuriated and gnashing upon them with their teeth. That's not actual physical action yet taken against the truth teacher. They're not chewing on him. That's not literal. This is all in the mind. They're thinking of how much they hate and want to do something to this truth teacher. But look at how far this can sometimes go. They shrieked loudly, verse 57. They stopped their ears. They rushed upon him, that is, upon Stephen, with one mind, one accord. They threw him out of the city and began to stone him. And they did stone him to death. You read there in the next couple of verses. And Stephen became what we call the first Christian martyr. So you see where this goes? So back to John 3 just here for a minute. And then I'm going to move on. And we're going to look at the last verse. Last is a little statement in Matthew 7 and verse 28. And we don't want to end that chapter study without looking at that verse. But on this point of listening and not doing and then where this sometimes goes, verse 19 of John 3 says that this is the judgment, that light has come into the world. Now, of course, Christ has been identified as light back in chapter 1, early in chapter 1 of this gospel. And in chapter 8, in verse 12, he's going to say, I am the light of the world. So this is the light, Christ. Christ has come into the world, but what? Verse 19, but men loved darkness rather than light. Why so? Why did they love darkness rather than light? Now, when you think of light, you think basically of right. You think of truth. Truth, holiness, goodness, and the good motives that go with those things. You might say concern for men's souls would be included in that, right? Well, but what was the problem? But men loved darkness rather than light, for their works were wicked. So what happens to this class of people when they become bent upon doing what they want to do? Well, they stop listening. That's what we read in Acts 7, verse 57. They stop their ears, literally. They stop listening. They can't tolerate that message anymore. And then, of course, they had a verbal demonstration. When people ever do that, they ever yell and chant and make sounds and play music and bang on things in order to stifle someone who's teaching the truth. Oh, we see this all of the time. So they'll use loud noises, either produced by the mouth or other instruments, and they will drown out the sound of the message of truth. Old Charlie Kirk had to deal with that a lot, didn't he? And we've seen that in many places, different situations. So they'll do that, and what's their problem? And eventually, they kill people. You know, Nigeria, literally thousands of people who call themselves Christians over the past year, and in Syria right now, have just been exterminated. They have been eliminated, slaughtered. Call yourself a Christian. Many parts of this earth, that can happen to you. They hate the light. That's the next verse. John 3 and verse 20, everyone who does evil hates the light. Now, why is it so bad? Why can't they just be wicked, like it says in verse 19? Why can't they just be wicked and go on their own way? Well, they can't do that. Everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works would be exposed or condemned. Everyone who works, whose works are true, comes to the light, so that his works may be revealed that they have been done in God. And we talked about Matthew 7 there, and at the end of that, where Jesus gave the illustration of the building on the sand versus the building on the rock, and they listened, but they did not do. Well, all of a sudden, there's a jump in the minds of too many people in this classification. They don't want to even listen now. They don't want to hear it, because their works are darkness. Their works are wicked. They hate the light. They do not come to the light, lest their wicked deeds be exposed. Now, is that not really what's going on here? People do not want to be criticized for what they're doing, or they don't want their actions to be criticized. Then, of course, they personalize it and make it very personal and take it personally, and they become angry, and they do what people did in the Jews did in Acts chapter 7 to Stephen. They execute them. So that's what we're seeing all over the world right now. And it goes back to what? It goes back to sin. Goes back to sin. Now, when people, and we had sort of a culture that had developed over many, many years where people at least had respect for human life. They may not like what you said. They may not like what you were doing, but they wouldn't kill you for it. So the difference is that that's a switch that has been made. But I wanted to explain, in light of some sermons I've done recently on violence and motives and other things, the connection between those two things before I moved on. But let's move on. Let's look back at Matthew chapter 7 and verse 28. I always thought this was a great verse of Scripture, very instructive about Jesus. Matthew 7, 28 and 29. It says, after Jesus finished this sermon, the crowds were amazed at his doctrine. Well, you know, an honest Bible student ought to be amazed at what you read from Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. It is amazing. For he was teaching them, I want you to notice the reason for this. He was teaching them as one having authority and not as the scribes. What was the difference between Jesus and a typical scribe, Jewish scribe of the day? Well, Jesus didn't speak authoritatively. He spoke as one actually owning, possessing the innately, well, I should say intrinsically, that's the more appropriate word, intrinsically divine authority, because he was God. Matthew 1:23, God with us, God in the flesh. And so he spoke as one, we might say, actually possessing authority, not as the scribes. See, the scribes had to teach like I do, or like you do. The only authority they have is the authoritative scriptures. They must appeal. They had to appeal to the scriptures. That's what we do today. That's what we must do today. We don't speak truth because it's inherent in us, because it originated with us. We speak truth only if and only when we're speaking as the oracles of God today. 1 Peter 4:11. So you see the difference. The difference between Jesus and a typical scribe of his day was that he spoke the message that was his own. Now, why was that? Well, that's that way because of John chapter 1 and verse 1. John 1, 1 and 2. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. This one was in the beginning with God. All things were created by him, and without him nothing was created. Life was in him, and the life was the light of men. He said, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not put it out. So what did John say about Jesus? Well, he called him the Word. The Greek word is the word logos. So that's why you'll see Jesus referred to as the divine logos or the eternal logos. He's the eternal person of the Word. So when it says in Matthew 7 and verse 28, he spoke as one or taught them as one having authority, he spoke what he was. He was the Word. He was the Word. He is the Word. He's called the Word of God in the book of Revelation. I always thought that was interesting. John again called Jesus the Word of life. In 1 John, said we'd handled him, looked upon him, and seen him. In 1 John chapter 1, the Word of life. Called him the Word there. And like I said, the book of Revelation does the same thing. What is the message there? What's the lesson for us? What does it mean when it says he taught them as one having authority? Well, it means what Matthew 28 and verse 18 means. What does Matthew 28 and verse 18 say? Jesus was giving the Great Commission. He was about to give the Great Commission. And he prefaced that with the words, all authority is given to me in heaven and in earth. And then he said, go therefore and teach all nations, and you remember the rest of that. Well, in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 17, whatever you do in word or in deed, do all by the name or by the authority of Jesus Christ, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Christ has all authority. If we want to be right with God, if we want to be able to be honest when we say we're listening to God per the Matthew 7, 24 through 27 passage, if we want to be honest in saying that and affirming that, we need to respect the words of God, the words of Christ, as being inspired, as being not just the words of men. He spoke to them as one having authority, not as the scribes. Christ is in a different class. And this is why Hebrews 1 and verse 1 is worded the way it is. God, who in sundry times, divers manners, spoke in various times, in many ways to people. This newer version that I have here, the McCord version, says, long ago God spoke to the fathers by the prophets at various times and in many ways. And that is so true, especially when you think of how God spoke to Balaam out of the mouth of a donkey. Many ways. Spoke to Moses out of a rock. Out of a bush. He spoke to Moses out of a burning bush in Exodus chapter 3. And then in verse 2 of Hebrews chapter 1, it says, but in these last days he has spoken to us by his Son. Now, what is the significance of that? Spoken to us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. He, Christ, is the radiance of his splendor, the exact expression of his nature, and he bears up the universe by his mighty word. That's why that's significant in Matthew 7 when it says he spoke by his own authority. Our time is up today. We thank you for tuning in this morning. Hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.